What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Future-proof extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, if you've listened to the show for any significant length of time, you'll probably be well aware that everything we see, all of the stars and nebulas, orangutans and seas, every single thing that we can see only make up about 5% of the universe. If you haven't listened to the show, that might come as a great and confounding shock. But don't worry. According to the standard model, dark energy makes up the bulk of this invisible stuff at 70%. But a new 3D cosmic map is calling the very nature of this mysterious force into question. Dr. Seshadri Nadathur is a co-author of the work and a senior research fellow at the University of Portsmouth's Institute of Cosmology and Gravitation. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Sesh. I want to start off by saying the whole dark energy and dark matter thing, for me, I know that's our best model at the moment. Just something doesn't sit right with me with it. So I'm really interested to talk to you about this. But let's first off talk about the project, this cosmic 3D map. What is it?
Thanks for having me on the show, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm speaking on behalf of the Dark Energy Spectroscopic Instrument, which is a collaboration spread over many different countries and universities. And basically what we do is we have an instrument mounted on the Mayall telescope, which is located in Kitt Peak, Arizona. And this is a very large telescope, which is surveying the sky. And the interesting thing about our experiment is we have 5,000 little robotic positioners. Each one of them carries a fiber optic cable. And these little robots can move around. So when we focus on a particular part of the sky, the robots can move until they are positioned exactly on an individual galaxy that we want to measure. And then we measure the light from that galaxy, obtain a spectrum from which we can determine the redshift of that galaxy. And the redshift tells us how fast the galaxy is moving away from us. We use this to deduce how far away the galaxy is from us. And we make a 3D map of the positions of many millions of galaxies. At the moment, for the data that we've currently processed, we're using about 6 million galaxy positions. But by the end of the survey, after 5 years, we will have around 40 million galaxies that have been mapped out.
So if we imagine the expansion of the universe as sort of little tiny stickers on a balloon, and as the balloon inflates, those galaxies go further away as the universe continues to expand. Are you saying that you're creating sort of a map that charts not only where these are in relation to Earth, but also how fast they're going away and in what direction?
So what we're doing is we're actually measuring how fast they are receding from us.
Okay.
And we need to convert that measure of how fast they're going away from us into a distance. Now, Hubble's law basically says that, the further away an object is, the faster it is receding from us, given the expansion of the universe. So that's a rough way of converting redshifts into distances. So
right.
We do that, and we create a 3D map. This requires that we measure the redshift very precisely. So that's a technique known as spectroscopy. And that's what's special about the instrument that we're using. It allows us to do this. But then we have to infer certain things from this map that we have created.
Right. So there are limitations because you are making sort of calculations rather than pure observation in a way. So you can see, you calculate how far away they are, but you know how fast they're moving away from us. Is that correct?
Yes. So what we do is we've created a map, and it essentially it's like a map without a reference scale on it. So we know where things are in relation to each other and in relation to us, but we don't know exactly how to calibrate that scale. So in order to do that calibration, we use a technique called the baryon acoustic oscillations. So that's what is giving us an absolute distance measure rather than just relative distances.
I see. Okay. So using this baryon acoustic oscillation, explain how that works, please.
So the baryon acoustic oscillations are basically the remnant features in the distribution of galaxies that are left behind from these ripples that ran through the very early universe when it was very hot and dense. And at that time, electrons and photons were bouncing off each other all the time. And we had a primordial plasma, primordial soup, you could think of it as, that was had these sound waves going on in it. And as the universe expanded and cooled, at some point the sound waves stopped traveling, and they left this little pattern of ripples that was sort of frozen in time. And then as over billions of years, as galaxies have formed, galaxies sort of trace that remnant pattern.
Sort of like a birthmark in a way.
Exactly, yeah. So in the maps that we've created of these galaxies, we can still, if we look very carefully, detect the remnants of that pattern. And that's what we're using. Now, the way that we use it is that we are able to say how far those sound waves would have traveled. And then we measure how large that pattern appears to be in the sky. And knowing how far the sound waves would have traveled tells us how big the pattern actually is. And by looking at how big it appears to be, we can figure out how far away the galaxies are that we are using to measure that pattern. So it allows us to calibrate an absolute scale.
That is really cool. So it's sort of like a sort of an expanding sort of stain or something that you can measure and kind of judge that how far it's been stretched gives you an idea of how far it's traveled. So to be clear, we now have a really good a map of galaxies around us, how far away they are, and the speed at which they're accelerating away from us. What do we know? You said Hubble said that nearer galaxies go slower and further galaxies go further. What do we learn from mapping this out about the expansion of the universe?
Right. So back in the day that Hubble actually discovered this or proposed his law, of course, he was referring to objects that were really very, very close to us in cosmic terms. And so there, the relationship is very simple. It's a simple proportionality. The further you go, the faster objects are receding. Mm-hmm. Once we start talking about objects that are really far from us on cosmic scales, then the relationship is not quite so simple. And it depends on what the components of the universe are. So it depends on how much matter there is, how much dark energy there is, whether the dark energy is changing with time, and all sorts of things like that. And so what we are doing with this map is we're measuring these distances to the galaxies, and we measure the speeds at which they are receding from us. And that relationship allows us to deduce how much matter or dark energy there must be in the universe at these different epochs at which we're measuring it, going back to 11 billion years in the past.
Right. But what I'm hearing from you is that there's variability in this idea of dark energy that wasn't presumed before, that we thought that dark energy was sort of a constant, and that you're saying that actually the speed at which these galaxies move away from us is actually less predictable than that sort of relationship that Hubble first proposed, you know, a mathematical equation presumably to say, look, if it's this near, it's going to be traveling this far away from us. If it's further away, there's some sort of constant there. You're saying that consistency doesn't exist across the universe?
Hubble was working in the 1920s. Things have progressed quite a bit since then. We've always known the equations that govern the relationships between distance and redshift are well known, and there's no controversy about them. The question is just, what is the actual composition of the universe and whether the dark energy does evolve with time? Now, dark energy was sort of conclusively proven to exist in the late 1990s. And
so just on that, when you say proven to exist, you mean mathematically, right? In theory?
I mean, through observations of various phenomena in the universe, the most important one was these exploding stars called type 1A supernovae, which also allow us to map out the relationship between distance and how fast things are receding from us. And that was very early data in the late 1990s, and that gave us evidence that, in fact, the expansion of the universe was speeding up. And then over the intervening sort of 25 years, we've had a lot more data that has confirmed that. But so far, that data has always been consistent with the picture in which a dark energy that causes the expansion to speed up has a constant behavior in time. So we've always known that there could be the possibility, the theoretical possibility, that this dark energy could change with time. And in fact, we're trying, all of these surveys are trying to measure whether indeed it does change with time or not.
Change in what way when you say energy, this dark energy changes with time? Because, you know, from an outsider, it sounds like you have this, you know, that there's this theory here, and now there's a question of the theory, and we're trying to modify our theory to make it work. But this dark energy, in what way do you think it changes over time, and how might that work?
So in fact, the particular quantity that we are looking at when we talk about whether it changes with time or not is something called the equation of state of dark energy. And this relates the energy density of the dark energy to the pressure effect that it has, which is causing the accelerated expansion of the universe. And if the relationship between those two is constant with time, then the dark energy appears to behave as though it were the energy of the vacuum itself. And that has been the simplest proposed hypothesis for what dark energy is that it's just a vacuum energy. And if it were a vacuum energy, a pure vacuum energy, it would have this constant equation of state. But if instead it's not caused by vacuum energy, but by some new type of scalar field or a new particle that has this funny behavior that is causing the accelerated expansion, then generically we would expect it to change with time, the equation of state to change with time.
And it's hard, of course, to determine this because we can't measure dark energy at the moment. It's not something that we can see.
We can't measure dark energy directly. We can only measure its effects on the expansion rate of the universe. Yes.
But what does this mean then? Because a lot of our understanding of the size of the universe, the age of the universe, it depends a bit on this calculation of dark energy, does it not?
Yes, that's right. We don't directly measure the age of the universe. We can measure the age of some components of the universe, certain stars and so on, but we infer that the age of the universe itself by basically running the expansion of the universe backwards in time in our models and seeing when that expansion rate would have started. And that depends on us knowing how fast the universe was expanding at different epochs in the past.
Yeah. Okay. So what does this say then? Because, you know, on one hand, it sounds like there is a theoretical plausible explanation for what you've observed. And then on the other hand, it would be quite fundamentally altering our understanding of how the universe works.
Yes, I think if you talk to theorists, almost every possibility of things that you could observe has been worked out as a possible, you know, a theoretical model that goes along with it at some point in the past. So, yes, there is a potential theoretical model that describes what we're seeing, but these theoretical models always come along with, you know, they're probably not correct. And if we ever discover that, in fact, one particular theoretical model is correct, then that's very big news. And it radically changes our picture of what actually might be happening in the universe. I should say, though, that the evidence that we have so far is providing us with a hint that dark energy might have this equation of state that changes with time. It's not definitive proof yet. It doesn't meet that standard of evidence yet.
Really exciting stuff. Sesh Nadathur, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.